Welcome to episode 16 of the We'll Bring the Popcorn Entertainment Podcast. I'm Brad, this is Josh, and on today's show, we're going to be talking about X-Men 97 episode 6, Shogun episode 9, we've only got one more to go after this one, and then our film review of the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Yeah, a lot coming up, but we do want to kick off this episode sending our condolences to the family of Warwick Davis, who unfortunately lost his wife Samantha at the age of 53 this week. If you know Warwick Davis has been in so many different films. He actually met his wife on the set of Willow. I know she also had some bit roles in the last Harry Potter film, as well as a few other projects as well, but just wanted to send our condolences to Warwick and his family.
Yeah, absolutely. Just 53 years old, just far too way young. Too soon.
Yeah, far too young.
Heading into our news, we have news from Quentin Tarantino that The Movie Critic, as we've been waiting for as his final film, he had Brad Pitt lined up to continue his character from his last film over into it, but it's not happening now. He's canceled it. He decided after a rewrite of the script and everything that he just wasn't feeling anymore, changed his mind, and he's no longer going to do the film. He's looking at something new to be his 10th and final.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the fact that he's at least willing to, you know, pivot if he doesn't feel like the writing is of the quality it needs to be, right? So Tarantino is, all of his films do incredibly well. They're all incredibly popular films. He's one of the most influential filmmakers ever. So it's unfortunate that he sounds like he's going to be hanging his director's hat up at this point, but I'm glad that he's at least being patient enough that, hey, if I'm going out, I want to go out the way I want to. I want it to be right. I want it to be up to the standards that I've set for myself over the years, and, you know, more power to him, because some people just rush and get it out of the way or just kind of dig their heels in and try to make something good that may not necessarily be good, but the fact that he's willing to, you know, put that on the shelf and come up with something different, I applaud him for that.
Yeah, because he's kind of said that you're more remembered for the last thing you did than what you started with, or your last few or what they'll remember you by. So he's being very cautious on what he does, and definitely sounds like he wants to hang it up. He wants to do one last one. So he was attached to doing already Star Trek, decided not to do that, and The Movie Critic now. But yeah, I'm glad that he's taking his time to make sure if this is his final project, that it goes out exactly how he wants to.
Yeah, and he's made so many incredible films over the years that, you know, if he's going to put a lot of thought and love into this last one, it's going to be absolutely epic, and I'm looking forward to whatever he winds up coming up with for sure.
Absolutely.
Moving on to The Office. So we've talked a lot about The Office spinoff coming. We do have a little bit of casting news finally that came out this week. It appears that Domhnall Gleeson, who played Bill Weasley most famously in the Harry Potter films, he was also General Hux in the Star Wars sequels, and Sabrina Impachitor, I believe that's her name. She was in The White Lotus.
You're asking me how to pronounce a name.
I'm asking you. I'm coming to you for advice this time. But it seems like they've been both cast in this spinoff. They're both international actors, so there's been some confusion as to whether or not that's going to be like an international office or what's going to come out of that.
Yeah, because you got Domhnall is Irish and she is Italian, so we don't know if maybe they're going to do American accents, but we did have some British actors on the American Office show, and of course, famously, it started in England,
of course,
for the first series, but we don't know if maybe they're moving outside and doing something else. So it's said to be in the same universe, so we know it's going to be connected, but you know, there could be potential that we're going kind of back overseas from the United States and doing something different, which we just don't know from this casting. It kind of brings up just a lot of interesting, like, how exactly are they going to be doing this spinoff with these actors?
Yeah, and it's The Office is such an iconic, you know, not only British show but American show. And the fact that they're spinning this off and finally getting a little bit of news out of it, it's kind of exciting just to see where they take it and what they do with it, because that's one of those, you know, we call them comfort shows that you just, you know, throw a random episode on that you could watch and you don't have to necessarily watch it from the beginning and watch it in order. But it's one of those, like, if I'm passing through channel flipping and it comes on, I put it on and watch a couple episodes. You know, it's one of those, you know, re-binge, re-watch shows that everybody loves.
Yeah, we do all the time because Comedy Central airs it, like, 500 episodes a week. It's on 4 or 5 days a week on Comedy Central, and if I've got nothing else going, there's The Office. I'll just turn on The Office and watch it again.
Put it on in the background while you're doing work.
I'll definitely be tuning in to see however direction they go, where it takes place. I'll be tuning in for the new Office.
Yeah, very much looking forward.
So yeah, moving on to some other casting news. We've kind of known for a little while now that Shadow the Hedgehog was showing up in Sonic 3. He was in a credit scene for Sonic 2. We now have a voice actor for it. Now, a lot of people thought it was going to be Hayden Christensen. There was a lot of rumors that he was going to voice it, especially after his resurgence with
Ahsoka
and everything in Star Wars again, that he's come back. But it's actually Keanu Reeves.
That's
which
awesome.
It's I love Keanu. He actually had a little bit of a cameo in the first movie. They were watching Speed,
right?
And so you got to see Keanu. You saw Sonic reacting to Keanu and Speed. But to have him as Shadow, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, Keanu Reeves, you could put him in anything and we'll watch it. Like, he's one of our favorites. But yeah, it's pretty cool because, you know, that's coming up, I believe, end of the year, if not beginning of next year. So very much looking forward to that. But it's pretty cool that it came out. It's like, all right, we got Keanu for this. So I'm ecstatic about that.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun.
So moving on to some more major director news, we've got Steven Spielberg, who is currently working on a UFO film that is kind of like his own original idea. He's working with David Koepp, who we've mentioned before, has written the scripts for the first two Jurassic Park films and has come back to the Jurassic World reboot film. So it sounds like it's a film that he's working on that's pretty exciting. I know he does really well with those kind of science fiction action type films, so it's exciting to see him working on another one.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Steven Spielberg return to doing sci-fi and stuff. He's done quite a few, but have an original idea about UFOs that he wants to do. I'm all for it. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do with it. And re-teaming with David Koepp, that they, you know, as you mentioned, did the original Jurassic Park movie with, and you know, he penned the second one, which I think Spielberg was executive producer. Might not have been the director on that one, but it should be hopefully really entertaining.
Yeah, there tends to be some, you know, some good things that come out of those two working together. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for what they come up with for this for sure.
Yep. Speaking of another team up, Martin Scorsese has announced another film of his with Leonardo DiCaprio. Leo is going to be playing Frank Sinatra in a biopic. We have Jennifer Lawrence will star as his second wife, Ava Gardner. So I think he's got a film about Jesus Christ that he's doing before he moves into this one. But yeah, go from Jesus to Frank Sinatra after doing Killers of the Flower Moon. I mean, you can't say Scorsese doesn't try to mix up and do different and original things as he picks what he's going to do in, you know, his later years here.
I mean, how good is it to be Leonardo DiCaprio, though? I mean, the guy goes from working with, like, Scorsese on one film, then he'll work with Quentin Tarantino on another film. Like, the guy gets to work with all of the amazing, like, he worked with James Cameron on Titanic. Like, he gets to do all these, like, amazing roles with all these iconic directors, and he, like, almost every film he does, he hits it out of the park in any way. But it's exciting to see him take on a role like Sinatra. That's going to be interesting because Sinatra's kind of like, if you know a lot about like his life story, he's a very interesting character. So I don't know how much singing necessarily
I was about to say that
DiCaprio was going to do for this, because Sinatra's got such an iconic, like, distinct voice that it would be hard to see. I don't see how DiCaprio could do with that.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever heard Leonardo DiCaprio sing in anything before. Like, he's been in so much stuff, like trying to remember what he sung. So yeah, maybe they do less about the singing part of his life and more about his life in general. But yeah, there was also another little tidbit I'm going to throw in here with Leo, that Zack Snyder came out saying that he was actually talking to Leo about being Lex in Superman versus Batman. Like, insane. Seeing Leo play Lex Luthor would have been really interesting.
Yeah, that would have been fun to see him sink his teeth into that too. I now that you mentioned that, I can't picture DiCaprio as Lex Luthor. Not that to say he wouldn't have the acting chops, obviously, to pull something like that off, but him, like, Leo DiCaprio in a comic book movie would be weird.
Mm.
It would be really weird. It kind of just, I don't want to say it seems beneath him, because that's kind of demeaning the whole genre, but, like, it doesn't, you don't too often see, like, actors of that high of a caliber necessarily, like, taking on those kind of risks and taking on those kind of roles, but.
Yeah, if I remember right, I think he also has a role that he's told to some up-and-coming actors that he's worked with, like, don't do this, don't do that, don't do comic book movies.
Right.
And to hear that he was potentially, we don't know how deep the talks went.
Yeah,
it could have just been an offer and he passed immediately.
Sure.
But to hear that he was even remotely in talks when he had that rule of not doing them, like, Okay.
I'd love to sit down with you and do like some of these, like this would absolutely never happen kind of weird fantasy casting of some of these types of films, and just to see the kind of crazy ideas that we could come up with for people playing some of these roles, and it'd just be like our no chance this would ever happen movie kind of thing. And you'd figure he would be in it. But that's pretty interesting that they came up with that though. Moving on to a video game that both you and I both played a lot growing up. It's a big arcade game. Golden Axe is getting a series produced for it by Comedy Central, which is very interesting because if you've ever played the game Golden Axe, it's a very violent, like side-scrolling, like fighting type game. It's being made into an animated series by Comedy Central.
Yeah, I was kind of caught off surprise. Like hearing that they're doing it, I thought maybe Netflix, as they've done Castlevania, and they've kind of done other adaptations of games, and you know, they're taking on He-Man. They've been doing a lot of animation lately. Really? But to hear Comedy Central is producing kind of their own original animated series based off of it was like, okay, so you know it's going to be comedic being on Comedy Central. Yeah. So it could be fun depending on how they do it. If they do do a pixel style like, you know, the old arcade games? What kind of style do they go with it to, you know, make the series stand out? But it in the end could be a lot of fun, but I just was caught off guard that Comedy Central was the one who was taking it on.
Yeah, it's one of those out of left field type stories. Because to your point, you mentioned that when you hear about these types of things being made, Comedy Central is not exactly the first studio you think of to kind of take on a project like that. Like you said, you could have Paramount taking on it, you could have Netflix, which in my opinion would probably have, if you'd have told me they were making it, I would have assumed Netflix had their hands on it. But the fact that Comedy Central got in on it's pretty interesting. I'm excited to see what they do because Comedy Central, when they put out animated series, a lot of times hit it out the park. I mean, South Park has been going on for it feels like almost 30 years at this point. It's at least 25 to 30 years. So a lot of the stuff that they put out does tend to have some staying power, so it'll be curious to see what they come up with.
Yeah, they helped continue Futurama for a few seasons on there as well and picked up. But yeah, I'll definitely be tuning in to see what they do with Golden Axe, because it was always a fun. I loved going to the arcade and just playing
such a fun game.
Yep. Another thing that's kind of caught people by surprise was the announcement that Sony's going to make a bid for Paramount. So we've got a big studio, which kind of everyone has been thinking for the last few years that maybe Disney would be going after Sony and buying them because of, you know, the partnership with Spider-Man and everything else. That, you know, with Sony, we kind of know that PlayStation and Spider-Man is what's really keeping them going strong as they are. To see that they're going after Paramount, like, that's pretty huge.
Yeah, that's not an insignificant story, right? You're starting to hear all of these. We've talked about it before in like past episodes about how these studios are kind of starting to conglomerate and combine. And my fear long term is it's just going to become one, you know, one giant company owning everything. I know we have like antitrust laws and things like that would hopefully prevent that from completely happening. But yeah, like the combination of Sony and Paramount's kind of interesting because we had talked before about the whole Warner Brothers potentially like trying to offload like Max to another company and potentially own it. And just this one coming, it is kind of weird that they pivoted to Paramount because I almost kind of figured it would be the other way around.
Yeah.
Even like Paramount would maybe try to buy Sony. Cause I mean, Paramount's got a lot of properties to it. It's not an insignificant purchase. So the fact that Sony's interested in acquiring that is kind of an interesting turn I didn't see coming.
Yeah, because what I mentioned with, you know, PlayStation and Spider-Man, that's kind of the core pillars of Sony. So with Paramount having 10 times as many pillars to their studio, right, you thought, yeah, it'd probably be opposite. And as you mentioned, you know, the potential of NBC Universal going after Warner Brothers and taking them on, potentially going to be down to just a handful of major. So like you're still going to have those properties and those studios underneath their blanket, but you're going to have just a handful of major studios left if both of those end up going through.
It's going to be one ring to rule them all, man. That's what it's going to turn into.
Yeah,
and hopefully, like long term, just thinking of the effect it's going to have on people that consume these things. If stuff becomes a little bit more condensed and harder to get, how much more expensive are these things going to be for people that want to, you know, consume this content? Because we're seeing it like with these constant price hikes with Netflix. Is Netflix is almost going to be, for the top tier, Netflix is like $20 something bucks a month now, and it's potentially going up even more. And it's going to get back to the point where it swings the other way, where we have the thing where, okay, cable was so expensive and everybody was looking for alternatives to that. Now this stuff's getting, if you have like three or four of these services, it's just as expensive as cable was.
Yeah, and then Sony has a few streaming services, mm-hmm. but Paramount definitely has the bigger with Paramount Plus and everything else. Are we going to see Paramount Plus no longer exist and it comes on under a Sony brand, or is the Sony stuff going to go to Paramount Plus and they'll keep that alive for that name brand? Like, there's a lot of interesting stuff that could happen. Like, we're going to see a condensing that kind of Disney's still trying to do with the Fox properties, because we had the Hulu integration go in to Disney Plus, but it's still two separate services just watched in a single app.
And then you got a bunch of them trying to come together for like a sports package as well, too. So there's that still to keep an eye on. And then you've got the deals with like ESPN Plus, UFC's coming up. Mm-hmm. A lot of things in the air like that's going to be interesting to pay attention to over the next couple of years, because even just like 5 years ago to now, the landscape of television and entertainment has totally changed, and it looks completely different than it did even 5 years ago. And I'm very curious to see what it looks like 5 years from now.
Yeah, if this ends up going through, it's going to be...
It's a game changer.
Yeah,
it really is.
It's going to change the landscape a bit of just having Sony owning Paramount.
Yeah, that's wild. Never thought you'd see the day, but it looks like it could potentially be happening. So we'll keep an eye on that and talk about it as, you know, more details come out about that. But moving on to one of our surprise, like, really hit shows over the last couple of years was Wednesday and how well it was done. I mean, we both love the Addams Family, but the original, this last season of Wednesday with Jenna Ortega did such gangbusters for them. They're already working on season two, and we got a little bit of extra casting news for season two, and it appears that Steve Buscemi has been cast as the new Nevermore Academy principal for season two. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, because if you watch season one, you know why there was a vacancy and who was in there before and everything that happened. But I love him. He, of course, as a comedic actor, he's been fantastic. But he's done some more dramatic and darker roles. But we know with season two of Wednesday, they've talked about that they're going to go a little more dark horror with it. So it's going to be really interesting to me to see how they utilize him. Is he just going to be a small piece that appears here and there, or is he going to have a major role in doing this season?
Yeah, you kind of figure when they get an actor like him, he may be a little bit more than a bit role, I would hope. But you don't know, is he going to be a little bit of comic relief for that? I don't know. But like you said, he's got the acting chops to pull off just about anything.
Do we get him showing up with a, hey, hello, fellow kids?
Yeah, hello, fellow kids. Oh, that would be so funny. I want that so bad. But yeah, we'll be interested to see, because I'm excited for season two. That's one of the more anticipated shows that's going to be coming out next year that everybody's really looking forward to.
Yeah, and a series that was really highly anticipated for this year, it's been out a week, is the Fallout series based off of the video game. Yep. It's on Prime Video. I've watched, I think, the first three or four. I haven't been able to make it through all of it yet, but I've really enjoyed it. It feels like you're watching a video game. It's very violent. I wasn't expecting as violent as it was. But after a week, it's already been picked up for season two. So it's like rave reviews across the board. People have been consuming it. The play for Fallout 76 and Fallout 4 have been through the roof with sales. And also because Fallout 76, I think actually Fallout 4 and 76 you can get on Xbox Game Pass. They've seen a huge spike in the games, but yeah, it's kind of no surprise, but I mean, it happened quickly, but it's not a surprise it's getting a season two.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, when we heard about it, it was like, well, what are they going to do? How are they going to adapt it into a show? And to your point, it's come out, and it's been a, not necessarily a surprise hit, but I think they're surprised at how well it's actually doing, because, like you said, it's one of those shows right now that's like super hot that everybody's talking about. There's a lot of questions and curiosity that like points back to the games. And we're like, okay, I'm assuming the people that never played the games are watching the series. And now, to your point, want to go back and try to play the games too. Mm-hmm. 'Cause the Fallout games are very popular, but it's one of those, like, it's cool that it's seeing the TV show lead to the game and not the other way around. That's a lot of the discourse that I'm seeing. It's like, well, I never really had much interest in the games, but now that I'm watching the show, I kind of want to go see what the games are all about, because if this is what they're making the show into, like, how does that play back to the games? And it's exciting to see that go back and forth a little bit, because a lot of times it's one leading to the other, but like, it seems like it's very heavily swinging the other direction. It's a weird, I don't want to say weird, but it's like a cool, like, social study on like how TV can influence games instead of the other way around.
He has a Fallout series that's been around for a very long time. It's extremely popular, but yeah, it's great to see people because I mentioned in a previous episode, I never played Fallout 76 because it had a lot of issues when it launched, but now it's, you know, pretty well smoothed out and people are having a lot of fun with it. I've had fun with it. I went back and I created a character. I've gone through about a couple hours of it, but yeah, like with any video game adaptation, a lot of people have been really hesitant because there's been some pretty terrible video game adaptations, but we've really got into a space where we've got Sonic, we've got The Last of Us, we've had a lot of video game adaptations lately turn out to be really good.
Worked out well, and I know like it got some mixed reviews, but the Twisted Metal series on Peacock has gotten some fairly positive reviews too, and that got renewed for a second
season. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that we enjoyed, so... It seems like we're getting a little, like you said, we're getting into a little bit more of a golden age of video game film and TV adaptations, which is awesome because, you know, we're both big gamers and we love, you know, we love our games, and to see like it finally start to get the, you know, the proper love and entertainment value turned into TVs and shows is awesome, and we love that.
Yeah, the one I'm still really worried about is The Legend of Zelda. They have announced that they're going to do a series on it, which I can't remember if it's live. I think it's live action instead of animated, but if you know The Legend of Zelda series, Link doesn't talk. So you're going to are you going to keep with that to have your main hero never speak, or are we going to get talking, because last time he talked was in that 90s series that was with the Super Mario show, which is, well, excuse me, princess, like a famous line from that. Yeah. Like, it wasn't the best voice, but that wasn't the best series either. So hopefully we continue with video game series doing well, and Fallout series season 2 performs really well for him as well. But I've enjoyed season 1 so far. I will be finishing it this week, and hopefully you're able to check it out soon too, because I think you'll really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's the next up for me, so it's definitely one. I believe as we're recording this, I'm going to try to watch episode 1 tonight just to get kind of into it, because I've been hearing nothing but good things as well, and I'm excited to dive into it for sure.
So kind of going back to streaming a little bit here is that Disney Plus has announced that they're going to add channels to their service, which they mentioned like Marvel and Star Wars would have, you know, 24-hour channel where we'd have series and films and everything airing. So it's like, welcome to cable.
Right.
You know, but it could be interesting for them because, you know, Disney Plus, especially with bringing in Hulu and everything else, you've got a lot of stuff on there. So this could be a way for people to discover shows or movies they hadn't watched yet from the channels, which they can go stream or they can watch live there. But it is kind of odd that we had, you know, streaming is about getting away from cable and the confines and everything, and now we're adding channels back to it. And I don't think there's any mention that they're going to bring stuff like Disney Junior channels or Disney like that. I'm sure that's probably going to come, but they don't want it to kind of interfere with what they're doing on their actual channels, but more of a discovery for some of their bigger properties.
Yeah, it's interesting because you draw the cable parallels, right? It's like, okay, we're getting away from this. But I can kind of see the interest in doing it just based on the fact that how often are you in these apps and you're scrolling, looking for something to find, and you can't find something, you're looking for something to watch. And hey, maybe you turn on one of these live channels and it's airing something that you're like, oh, that's something that I would be interested in. And maybe it takes you like watching an episode to go back into the streaming service that you're already in and starting it from the beginning or something. I can kind of see the appeal in that a little bit. But yeah, it feels very cable-esque, and I don't know how I feel about it yet.
It's because we mentioned that we'll see The Office popping up on Comedy Central and just turn it on. Like, we've seen it a billion times, but we see it pop up. Hey, we're going to watch it. And so I think that they're really looking to get something like that, but I hope they also expand. Like, maybe their classic movies, they just have a channel that's classic Disney movies airing all the time, because there's still some that I haven't introduced my kids to from, you know, back in our day, because there's so many of them from when Disney started through my childhood to get them introduced. And that could also be a good way for younger generations to find some of the older films if they do that. I think so far Marvel and Star Wars has been the only ones that have been mentioned, but I'm sure they're not going to limit it to just that.
No, sure. Those are the best two, in my opinion, to probably test run and pilot study just to see how well it does, if people are tuning in, if people are watching it. They have their own ways of tracking that, obviously. They're not very public with that type of information, which I don't necessarily care for, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on to see how it does, because I like I said, I have mixed feelings about it. I can see the thought process behind it, but like, you're getting away from cable for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. You're trying to be an alternative. Now you're turning on live channels and you're acting like cable again. Is that going to be more costly? Is the cost going up for people because you're doing that? Or is this just an additional service you're going to be providing on top of what we're already paying?
Yeah, and hopefully it's not adding more ads and stuff, because you do have ad-free tiers and you have ad tiers, but are they going to end up throwing ads into these channels? And if you want the channels without ads, is that another add-on or something? We haven't had any word on that, but that's kind of a worry that you look at, that if it looks like the channels are doing well, they're going to try to see how they can capitalize. And I feel like ads maybe in between will happen, maybe not during the movies or the shows to kind of break that, but maybe they'll throw it in between, but I kind of hope not. But once they do that, it's cable again.
It would be an interesting business study just to see the investment that they're making in it and what it's costing them to do it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because if they're pumping money into it, they're going to want to make money from it, right? Mm-hmm. So what the cost that's going to be passed down to, you know, everyday consumers like you and me and, you know, the people watching and listening, like, how much of that is going to be pushed on us now? Like you said, is it going to be an extra $5 to get these channels? Like, there's a lot of people that probably don't even care that these channels are going to happen, right? It's an interesting, like you said, it's an interesting business study to see like the thought process behind it and what their plan is for the entire unveiling of this, because it's, like you said, it's going to start to potentially walk a fine line to where it's becoming like its own individual cable service and not just on-demand programming. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because you see a lot of these moving into like live sports as well and stuff like that. That's going to kind of make them become more like cable. You know what I mean? So yeah, I don't know. The jury's still out for me. Like the more I think about it, I'm just like, eh.
UI-wise is going to be interesting, too, because do they put the channels on the homepage when you load Disney Plus? Is it just going to be a tab and, you know, the left menu for it to open? How are they going to make sure that people see that these channels are available other than a graphic that may look like everything else? Because, you know, they're going to want to promote it. They want to get out in front of you. But how they really integrate that and how it kind of looks, because if you're just flipping through movies and TV shows, you may not see those channels. So we got to see exactly how those channels are going to be integrated into your search, into your just overall interface, so that you can find and know that they're there.
So it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And I don't think they put a time frame on when they were going to start rolling it out. It's just that they were doing it. Or did you hear like when they were?
Yeah, it's coming, but I don't think we have a date yet when it's going to debut.
Okay. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. We'll pass that information along, obviously, as we see it. So moving on to our next story, one of the animes that I like a lot that is very popular as well is One Punch Man, and it seems like it's going to be getting a live-action adaptation as well. It appears to be penned by the writers of Rick and Morty, so Dan Harmon and Heather Ann Campbell are writing the script, and it's also going to be directed by Justin Lin, so very interesting. I know there's been a lot of fantasy casting of this over the years, especially with a lot more of these animes being adapted into live-action. There's always the fantasy casting, like who's going to play it, and I know one of your favorite, I'll let you speak to it, but one of your favorites in particular is a very famous action star.
Yeah, so I don't know the One Punch Man anime too much. I've seen some clips of it, and I know what the character looks like, so seeing memes that come out, having Jason Statham play him, like, I mean, he's got the look for it, but other than being, you know, a British guy, but that was about all the knowledge I have, but I always find that funny. Like, it's a big over-the-top action movie. Make it be Jason Statham.
For my money, one of the best intro musics in all of anime. So if you ever watch it, it's got that iconic One Punch. You know, like, it's so good. I love it. It's definitely a different anime, but it's really cool. It's one, if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. But so much fun. It's got very strong, you know, it's one of those that could, I feel that could transition into a live action film pretty well. It's definitely one to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, anime is one that's just like video games. It's been very hit or miss. We've had a lot of success. The Cowboy Bebop series on Netflix didn't fare very well, but the One Piece did.
Yeah, it did.
But you also had the Scarlett Johansson Ghost in the Shell movie that didn't go over too well, and the Dragon Ball movie that didn't go over, the live action Dragon Ball movie that didn't go over too well, because there's a lot of animated Dragon Ball movies that are really good. But yeah, it's, you hope that as long with video games that anime is moving it, because it is hard because they are such kind of crazy over the top stories with what they do to make it work in live action.
Yeah, and it, if you've seen One Punch Man, you could. There's a little less worry of that. I mean, there's some stories that they definitely wouldn't be able to tell in a film, but there are some stories that I feel would be easily adaptable into a live action one. So I'm excited to see which of those they would pull from, and tell in that you know avenue. So it's exciting that we got the news that it was being made. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see who they cast for it. There's a lot of options. Obviously, Jason Statham would be a ton of fun, but it would probably be someone a little younger, but it's going to be fun. I'm curious to check it out.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out, even though I don't know the anime. I'm going to be interested to see, without knowledge going into it and comparing to you that has knowledge on it, to see just exactly how it compares to a fan of the series and someone who doesn't really know the series, to see if they did a good enough job to bring in new people, but also appease the fans of the show. So speaking of a show that we have had a ton of fun with and really loving with X-Men 97, we have three directors from the show have come out saying that they would love to get a budget and time to do a full-length animated movie for X-Men 97, which I know both of us would be in agreement that, yes, please. But they talked in that interview that, you know, if they had the time and budget that Spider-Verse got or the latest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle animated movie got, that it would be a slam dunk for them, that they could really turn out something great, because they feel like they've been doing like movie level stories with this series, which we can agree to, like, especially with the episode 5, Remember, it was such a dramatic, hard hitting, deep 30-minute episode. Like what they could do with a full length film would be pretty amazing.
Yeah, like a full 90-minute to 2-hour, you know, film would be incredible from these guys. And they've done such a bang-up job, as, you know, we've been giving them glowing praise up to this point. And spoiler alert, we're going to give them some more glowing praise when we get to the episode review. But yeah, like getting a full-length film, they kind of have, like, if you piece together some of these stories that they've told, even going back to the original X-Men, the animated series, like, they tell movie-level stories over the course of, like, 4 or 5 parts, because there are some of these, like, they did the entire Dark Phoenix saga, which I believe was 4 or 5 episodes, which amounts to about an entire full-length feature film. So being able to just take those bits and pieces and put it in one continuous, one-shot film like that would be amazing. The stories that they could tell are endless. I'd love to see which comic book story they would adapt. Would it be more of original? I know there's talk of these animated films being implemented into the MCU now with some of the things that they've revealed with, you know, the stories that they've already told up to this point. If you haven't watched it, you could see some of the discourse online and keep up with the show as we have, but it feels like there's definite possibilities for that to happen, and I would really love to see Marvel get behind something like that, because I think it would do very, very well.
I'm completely down if Marvel will back them and let them do a full feature film, for even if maybe it's a wrap-up to it. We don't know how many seasons this, you know, new iteration will last, so maybe they give them a few seasons and allow them to wrap it up with a film would be really good.
That'd be amazing. So keeping in the Marvel theme, we did get a little bit of a news, a little quick tidbit. Simu Liu, who, you know, has made the Shang-Chi film, he's been somebody that I know a lot of Marvel fans are like, okay, we love Shang-Chi, like, when is Shang-Chi 2 coming? And he kind of came out this week and said that it's gonna happen. He doesn't have an exact date for it, but thank God that they're finally gonna, you know, put the pen to paper and get this second film made, because it's been a hot minute. It feels like it's been forever since the last film came out.
Yeah, it feels a lot longer than it actually been. It's been 3 years since it came out, but it feels like it's been 5, 6, 7 years since we saw Shang-Chi. But yeah, I mean, he gave that update saying, you know, I promise it's happening. He didn't really have any more that he could give on that, but yeah, I'm really loved Shang-Chi. It was different. It was interesting. He did a fantastic job. Amazing. The action sequences were really fun. And, you know, he just did Barbie and had a lot of fun in that. Sure. So his star power has been building even more. But it's kind of weird just how long we've waited. And if we, when we do get Shang-Chi 2, it's going to be 5, 6, 7 years at that point, depending on where it falls in the line here. Yeah. We've heard rumblings maybe he'll show up in the Avengers films, either Kang Dynasty or whatever that's being called now,
right,
or Secret Wars that he's going to show up. I hope he's at least in Secret Wars because that's going to have everybody. But it does feel with this kind of disconnect that Marvel's had in the last phases is that they've kind of tried to push out too much to where these characters are just kind of being left behind, because Shang-Chi felt like he was going to be moving into the MCU to kind of be a big new star and big new character for it, and he doesn't exist in the last like few years of stuff that's come. Like, you've had no real reference to him. There's been just radio silence.
And it's been kind of weird with that. But like you said, when we were putting together news stories for this week and that one came up, we both were like, okay, it feels like it's been forever. And then we looked it up. It came out in 2021. Like, it was just 3 years ago, right? So it's like, that's that weird time void that we've all been in for like the last 4 years, where it's just like everything just kind of molds together. It feels like it's forever, but in the grand scheme of things, it's only been 3 years. So
it's COVID time that feels like it added plus 20 years to everything. It really did,
because like everything just got kind of mixed up and weird. Time stopped and it like sprung forward again. It's like we were in our own like Marvel, like our own Marvel blip for like a few years. Like it's just weird how all that stuff comes together. But yeah, I'm excited that there's at least a positive update for that, because I know you and I were both big fans of the film when we went and saw it, and it's finally getting a second film, which is great, because you know, we want good things for him and that character for sure.
Yeah, I'm glad we at least got a small update to be able to hear that it's at least still moving forward or something, because we know Disney has talked about and Marvel have talked about they're kind of relooking at things after you know, fans' backlash to series and movies and stuff that have come out recently, that they're kind of slowing down and making sure they're worrying about quality over quantity, and we're glad that Shang-Chi 2 didn't end up being on the cutting room floor and that we're not going to see him return again. And I really hope it's not too much longer before we see him come back. Absolutely. Another series of films and TV shows that we have coming out is with around the Alien franchise. So we've got Alien Romulus that's coming out this fall, which we got the first trailer and it looks fantastic. That looks, I believe it's taking place after the second Aliens film.
Yes.
But we also have a series that's going on from Noah Hawley. He is doing an Alien series, and now we've learned that it's taken place 30 years before the first Alien film. So looks like before the first Alien film, but after Prometheus and everything, we got into those prequels. So we're kind of getting some new stories that are wedged into all these other expansive stories that we've got. And I just hope, you know, we haven't seen the film yet with Romulus. We hope, at least from what we've seen in the trailer, that we have that same sort of quality coming to this series.
Absolutely. And it feels like the Alien timeline is being filled in with gaps and stories, and they're like, okay, what can we fill this period of time with that we know with this type of story? And like you said, Romulus looks incredible. We're both very excited to see that film when it comes out later this year. We will do an episode on that, obviously, when it comes out. But getting note that this is going to take place in between Prometheus and the original Alien film, I'm excited to see what stories they could tell, because you know, Prometheus was a little bit divisive, and like there were some people that thought it was absolutely brilliant. Some people felt very much the opposite way. But I know one thing that's kind of universal is those first two specific Alien films were absolutely fantastic. It's one of my favorite sci-fi / horror films of all time. Honestly, Alien and Aliens are like two of my top 10 horror sci-fi films. Personally, just love them. Love them so much, but it's exciting to see where they take it, because there's some really cool source material that you can use there and just kind of take those and build and take this in a completely, you know, incredible direction that I'm hoping they do with this series, but we'll see, you know, more details as it comes out.
Yeah, I just hope that we stick with some good tension horror. That's what I love the most about the first two Aliens. You know, the second one upped our action and gave us insane action, which I wouldn't mind to see, but that's what I loved most about the original Alien, was that horror tension that you just...
It's terrifying.
Yeah, you didn't know what was going to happen, and it's like, wait, like you really hadn't experienced something like that before Alien, and it's what we seem like we're getting with Romulus. So hopefully, like, I want them to do their own thing, but I hope that they're staying true to the core good Alien and not, you know, we've seen the xenomorphs used in a bunch of different films, and of course the later Alien films were not as well received. So sure. I hope this is a good renaissance for the xenomorphs and the aliens to come back strong. Keeping Cunning in Space, one of my favorite shows from Apple TV Plus is For All Mankind. So we just got the season 5 renewal, which I'm glad. I absolutely love this show. It is so good. It's an alternate history about if we kept up with the space race and how things happen between Russia and everything else with the space race and continue on. But speaking of that, we are getting a spinoff called Star City, based on the Russian space program. So, you know, not only are we getting season 5, which with a lot of streaming platforms, you see 3-4 seasons are kind of the max that a lot of them are getting. Sure. There's some that can go more. So I wasn't sure how it was going. Like, it ended in a way, season 4 ended in a way that it could stop there, but also there's still plenty of story to tell. So I'm happy to see a season 5 and definitely will be checking out the spinoff.
Yeah, for sure. It's a show that I haven't personally gone in and watched yet myself, but I know how big into like space specific stuff that you're into as well. And I'm happy for, you know, fans of the show as well to get a fifth season. It's been one of those that like doesn't feel like the quality of the show has really ever dipped too much in the first 4 seasons, which is rare also, because the longer some of these shows go, you get like, oh, you hear all the time, oh, season 1 and 2 were great, but then season 3, it just kind of made a left turn somewhere. But from what I've seen of the discourse on that show, it's like it's maintained a high quality standard for 4 seasons.
And this is not a low budget show either. Yeah. Like, it is a high set, you know, really deeply intricate sets, a lot of CGI. Like, it's not a cheap show to put together. There's a big cast, there's a lot to it. So to see them committing to 5 seasons is actually more than I really expected the series to get, but I love that it's still going at a high quality level.
Right, and it's definitely something that, you know, we're excited for and glad that it's getting a fifth season. Another show that's going to possibly be, well, it's not possibly, it got confirmed that it's going to end with season 5, very controversial at this point, is The Witcher. So Netflix did come out this week and say season 5 will be the end of the run. I know there's a lot of discontent around the show right now with Henry Cavill exiting after season 3 and Liam Hemsworth taking over as Geralt for season 4. Looks like he's going to get 2 seasons as The Witcher, so we're getting season 4 and finally season 5. We'll see the end of the run of this show, which I know we've talked about it before, how we feel, you know, we love Henry Cavill. We're reviewing one of Henry Cavill's films later, and it's seeming like they're going to give it a shot to go 2 seasons and see what they do with it. I'm curious to see what the staying power of the show is going to be as it ends its run here.
Yeah, I'm definitely mixed about Liam taking over. Like, and it's nothing against him. I think he's a fun actor and everything, but it's kind of the way things ended between Henry and the show and the producers about just he didn't leave because he had other projects to do or something. There was a lot of discourse. There's a lot of butting heads between him and the producers and the people behind the show. He had a deep love for the Witcher stories from the books and even from, you know, what was adapted into the games from it. And he felt like they weren't listening or doing well with what they were moving into. Like, I enjoyed all the seasons that he did, but I'm mixed if I want to continue on with Liam or not. It's less about him, but more just about kind of knowing that bad blood drama that kind of let Henry walk away is what's kind of got me, like, it's kind of tainted the show a little bit for me.
Sure, and a lot of people feel that way too. I'm personally willing to at least give it a chance. I'm going to watch at least the first couple episodes probably just to see how he adapts to the role and if I can get that vision of, you know, Henry Cavill out and kind of accept him as Geralt at this point, but yeah, I'm at least willing to give it a chance just to see if it's good, because I did enjoy the first 3 seasons of the show. It's high quality, very well done, but it's so divisive. Like, there's a lot of vitriol around that show now just because of how, you know, things ended with Henry Cavill. It's like, okay, why are you continuing with Geralt at this point? Do you pivot to another character, which I don't know how you could do, or you just let it end there, but it seems like Netflix is kind of stubbornly going, okay, we wanted to do 5 seasons, we're going to do 5 seasons anyway, so
yeah.
It's interesting to see, you know, how well it maintains its popularity. Because it is a very popular show, like you said. Not a lot of these shows get more than one or two seasons anymore, and it's getting a fifth, and that's another one of those high-budget, like, not-cheap-to-put-together shows.
We'll see if it ends up getting the fifth, if the fourth kind of doesn't perform very well because of everything around it. I have seen a lot of fans online saying they probably will not be tuning in.
Sure.
If season four bombs a lot, it could just end up ending with four, because Netflix is not one that's known to give a long leash on shows that once it feels like either it's costing too much or they just want to be done with it, they cut it loose. Because we know that famously from the Marvel series that, yeah, you know, we thought those were going to go on forever, and most of them got like three seasons and right, it was over.
Yeah. It's definitely one to keep an eye on. So one of the films that's coming out, it's a quick news story that I wanted to touch on before we go into our TV review, but one of the films we're really looking forward to this year is Furiosa, the new Mad Max story that's starring Anya Taylor-Joy that's coming out this year. It's got Chris Hemsworth. There's apparently a 15-minute action sequence in the film that took 78 days to film. That is insane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that brought me right back to Game of Thrones, where he famously had that night battle scene that I think was like 2 months or something for them to do as well. With, I think Furiosa said there were over 200 stunt people there. I think it was more for Game of Thrones, but that's a commitment to an action sequence to film for 78 days to get 15 minutes of footage.
It's incredible. It speaks to show like how much love can go into making a film and how grueling of a process it actually could be. Because for a lot of films, 78 days is the entire shoot schedule for the entire movie. Like, I don't know if people know how long it takes to make these films. Sometimes it takes 2 to 3 months. Sometimes it could take longer. But that's almost an entire movie shoot for a lot of production that gets done. And the fact that it took that long to just make a 15-minute sequence, I'm very excited to see what that action sequence is going to look like on screen, because, like, you and I are both big fans of the Mad Max movies, and, like, this one looks, visually, it looks just incredible already, and we're very much looking forward to seeing that film when it comes out, but I thought that was just such a wild story.
Oh, yeah, it's just crazy to spend that much, and I cannot wait to see that scene. And see the movie in general, because the last one was so fun and so good, and he's got such a great visual style that he puts onto it, but it's kind of unpredictable, and you don't know what's going to happen as well. So what is going to happen in that 15-minute sequence? Because he likes to do as much stuff practically as he can.
Yeah.
So that's going to really be a great scene to watch.
Absolutely.
Moving on to our TV breakdowns for this week, we have X-Men 97 Episode 6. So, of course, in Episode 5 that we did a spoiler review on that you can check out, that was a very heavy episode. And we move into what now is the second part of the life-death storyline with Storm, which we got as we mentioned before, we were a little mixed on that. We had Jubilee story, where she goes into a video game, split with the first part of Storm and Forge's story. And now we're coming into this, but there was actually a surprise that we didn't realize we were getting, that there was another story being told within this episode.
Yeah, and we come to find out. So at the end of the X-Men, the animated series, one of the things that's assumed is Charles Xavier is near death. He basically gets shuttered off into space with his love, Lilandra, who is the Empress of the Shi'ar Empire. And it's assumed that he's gone. He's gone completely. We don't get the exact, you know, conclusion to it, but it's widely assumed that he's gone and he's not coming back. Mm-hmm. Well, surprise, spoiler alert, he's alive.
Can we just start the episode right off with
just jump right
not
into
Storm.
It.
We're going right into Charles being alive.
Yeah, and it's crazy. And he's living this life with Lilandra. They're getting ready to get married. He's got some, it looks like he's walking. So we're like, what the heck is going on? And come to find out with some of the technological advancements that they have, that he's able to move, you know, with the help of these, you know, bionic legs that he's been given that kind of come off as needed. I'm not doing it justice in explaining how it works, but he's able to walk around and move around freely. And a lot of that story is centered around their marriage and the ramifications for the Shi'ar Empire. And you get reintroduced, if you've watched the animated series, to some of these characters that go along with that type of story.
Yeah, as we started the episode right off with a lot of action. So we have Lilandra's sister, Deathbird.
Yep.
Which, of course, comic book names, like, you get some that are great and then Deathbird,
right? Some are just straight to the point.
But she's in a battle with Ronan. So, of course, you watch Guardians of the Galaxy series. If you only know it from those films, you know, we got Ronan showing up. We got Gladiator. We got a lot of kind of more cameos of characters in here. And she's, you know, just defeated Ronan, and her sister calls to announce that she's getting married. Right. Like, okay, that's a good time to interrupt is when she's taking out Ronan the Destroyer. Like, and she is, you know, annoyed, and she is not a fan of this union. She doesn't like that her, you know, her group is going to have an emperor that's a Terran, that is from Earth. Like, they don't believe that he should be allowed to be emperor and shouldn't be allowed to marry her. And, you know, she, throughout, you know, that part of the episode is very much against it and leads to a big, you know, conflict in the end. But she ends up challenging Charles that if you want to be our emperor, you have to forget about Earth. That means you have to forget about your X-Men, your life beforehand. You know, they do have psychic powers, so they're like, Lalandra, you have to wipe his memories. Yep. He cannot remember Earth. He cannot remember his X-Men.
Yeah, and they give him, like, the ultimatum. It's either that or you can't, like, this wedding's not happening. And you kind of get this, like you said, the conflict of, okay, we're going to usurp your power, Lalandra, here, and we're going to take over if you go through with this that we don't approve, unless he agrees to meet this very specific demand that we have. Because they do view Earth as a lesser, you know, like the people of Earth as lesser beings beneath the power of the Shi'ar, and it's a very interesting dynamic back and forth that plays between that. And you get a very cool, like, by the end of the episode, you get a very cool scene where you get to see Professor Xavier, like, show off the, you know, the breadth of his psychic abilities when he kind of
takes him off of school. It was a little bit absurd. But yeah. He's like, oh, wait, I forgot. I can use my powers on them.
Right. And he takes them all to the astral plane and makes them sit at their desks and teaches a valuable lesson, which is kind of funny, but it was a pretty cool scene that we'll get into how it ends. But you also pivot to this story with Storm, who in the previous episodes, if you've been watching along, we're getting into some spoiler stuff, but she gets hit with this power dampener that she can't use her powers anymore. So she's on this quest to regain them. And they do this incredible job of, you know, her processing these emotions and, you know, going through what she needs to go through to eventually come out the other side. And one thing I was kind of surprised is we got this conclusion very quickly. It was done in an episode. So it was one of those, you kind of feel like we're so used to some things being drug out. Like, it may have taken her by the end of the season, maybe, to get her powers back. She's back, baby. Like, she goes through the whole ordeal and she's back and she's better than ever. Her look is amazing. She gets her powers by the end of the episode back and she looks like she's stronger than she ever was.
Great new look and everything. But it was weird because we kind of, like, we got the first part with that Jubilee episode, and this has the same name. This whole episode has the same name as that, as but part two. So we kind of thought this whole episode was going to be her going through it. And I think her time in the episode was less than what we got with Charles.
It was
that side. So we did kind of get that resolution kind of quickly by the end of the episode, which I still think it was done good, because we actually got kind of a horror aspect with this, you know, bird creature that's, you know, loves fear and is coming after her because of her fear. And if you know anything about the Storm character, she's claustrophobic, and she actually ends up having to go into a very claustrophobic area to try to get this cactus flower that could heal Forge, who was attacked by that creature. And, you know, she ends up finding her strength and her power again through realizing she needs to face her fear, face what she was giving up or what she thought about. Oh, it might be interesting to not have powers anymore. And she's like, the powers are part of me. That is me.
Embrace who you are.
And she gets a very Man of Steel, just comic booky explosion of, I'm back. Like, it was a great scene.
The way it ended was amazing, because she comes back and she's in all her splendor, and it feels like she's even stronger than she was before. Mm-hmm. Like, not only do they come back in a big way, because she's, it makes sense if you watch it, but it's so well done in such a short amount, compact amount of time. And I'm glad they didn't prolong it and drag it out, because you get kind of both stories in this episode converging by the end, getting to the same point of, okay, now we're getting to the point where we're catching up with the events of episode 5. Mm-hmm. So the episode ends with Storm and Forge seeing on TV the attack on Genosha that happens in episode 5, and you see the horror for her and her realizing that, okay, I need to go, like, I need to get back and, you know, help my friends and, you know, try to figure out what's going on here and how to fix it. And by the end of the episode as well, you get the scene with, you know, Professor X giving his lesson in the classroom, but then you see, like, this turn and, like, the globe and the classroom catches on fire, and, like, he starts getting the visions. He's finally getting the visions of what happened to his X-Men on Genosha, and he gets those visions of the attack and everything that happened, and you see, like, his horror, and he's like, okay, I would love to go through with this wedding, but I have to get back to Earth. Because they play on the dynamic of, yeah, you may not forget about them, but you can't go back to them. Like, you have to be here. And by the end of the episode, he's like, no, I have to get back to the X-Men. And the episode ends with, you know, a bit of a reveal as to who was really behind the attack on Genosha and where it sets up for the last 4 episodes of the season. And it winds up being Mr. Sinister, who is behind the attacks as well. He may not necessarily be alone, but you get that a little bit of that reveal by the end to set up some really cool things, I hope, for the last 4 episodes of the season.
Yeah, overall, I enjoyed the episode. It had some revelations for both of them, but it was another one where, like, we felt like the Jubilee storyline could have been a fun, full episode. We felt that Storm, you know, Storm's part of getting her powers back could have been its own episode by itself. The Charles story here could have been its own episode by itself. So it did feel a little odd to have 2 episodes that had stories split, but it was like we knew the Jubilee and Storm one was split. We didn't know this one was going to be split. So it was kind of a weird surprise. Like, it didn't make it bad, but it was just kind of odd that we weren't expecting to see that split up like that. Because, yeah, the only other problem I kind of had with the episode is that, so we have Ross Marquand is the voice of Charles Xavier now, which he does a fine job. It's definitely a different voice than the original voice actor, but he does a fine job with it. But the audio mix on it felt a little weird to me. It felt at time like Charles's voice was a little more, like, muffled than all the other actors, like Londra and Deathbird and all those who were talking around him seemed nice, bright, and clear, and he sounded a little just muffled.
Yeah, I noticed that too, and it jarred me at first. One, because as big a fan as we are of the original, we have that iconic voice of, you know, Charles Xavier in our heads, and obviously we had to, you know, pivot to Ross Marquand, who is a fantastic voice actor. Met the man, he's amazing, and he does a good job here. But yeah, the mix was definitely off on this. But I get what you're saying about, like, the pigeonholing 2 stories into 1 episode aspect of it. But I'm hoping at the end of the day, when we get to the end of this season, because it's only 10 episodes, so it's not your typical 20 to 22 episode season that a lot of shows get. So I feel like they have to compact some of it. And I'm hoping that they got through these to get to a much meatier story, because if you look ahead, the last 3 episodes of the season are a part 1, 2, and 3. So there's going to be some ginormous story that they're going to tell. And like we'd mentioned before, where the creator of the series came out and said, if you thought 5 is crazy, 8, 9, and 10 are going to be insane. Well, it sounds like it, because it's going to be 3 parts. So I'm hoping that, okay, we tell this quick story. It could be explored a little more, but we've only got 10 episodes to get this done. And we got to get through it quickly to tell this incredible story that we hopefully have to end the season with. Cause I'm very much looking forward to, now that everybody's on the same page of, you know, we're at the same point in the story that we're getting to the fallout of Genosha now, that it's gonna kick off in a big way, I'm hoping.
Yeah, with that setup, we now, you know, this was episode 6, so that leaves episode 7 as kind of the lone episode left before we move into the 3-part finale. So there's still some setup and things to do in episode 7 before we move on to the last 3. But it's been a fun ride so far. I love the animation style. You know, the episode 5 is still the pinnacle of the series so far. It was so good. But they've done a great job bringing it back, and they didn't bring it back in a way that was just small and childish or anything else. Like, this has got some depth to the story, as the X-Men showed. They're a very political group. They've been kind of heavy with their notions and what they talk about and what they do, and I'm glad that they haven't shied away from keeping the storylines a little bit more adult and keeping it a bit more serious at times. And I'm really excited to see how this first season ends, because we do have hints that season 2 was in the works. We hope we get it. And we know the directors want to do a movie. So those who have been a fan of this, we've got a lot to potentially look forward to.
Absolutely. So that is episode 6 of X-Men 97. It's on Disney Plus right now. We cannot recommend checking it out enough. We're both big fans of the show. Moving on to our other TV review of the week, we have episode 9, the penultimate episode of Shogun. So this is the next to last episode of the series. It's only 10 episodes. We get episode 9. If you remember where episode 8 left off, they're going to Osaka to meet with Ishido to kick off this grand plan that Toranaga apparently has. But man, the title of the episode is a little bit misleading because it's called Crimson Sky. And if you've watched the show to this point, Crimson Sky is this attack on Osaka, but you don't really so much get the attack. There's an attack by the end of the episode, but it's not kind of the one that you're thinking of. Mm-hmm. But another gut punch episode, man. And before we get into like the meat of what happened, I just want to highlight Anna Sawai, who's played Mariko up to this point, absolutely amazing. But this episode here is so heavily centered around her and her power as a character. In my opinion, this is going to be an episode that I hope that she gets an Emmy nomination for.
100%.
Because it is incredibly well acted on her part. She's been brilliant this entire time, but this episode right here, just so good for her. She's getting a lot of flowers for it already, and I would anticipate that she gets an Emmy nomination for one of the best acted episodes by one character that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, she was absolutely incredible, and 100% agree. If she doesn't at least have a nomination for an Emmy or many other awards, whatever awards she could get nominated for, if she doesn't at least get a nomination, something is wrong there, because she was absolutely incredible for this episode, but the whole series as a whole. Like, she balances the emotions and the heart and the soul and the duty and, you know, wants and desires, and just she has done an incredible job this whole series. And yeah, like you said, this episode really does center around her. So we kind of left the last episode where she is told by Toranaga to get on the boat with John and Yabu and head to Osaka. And we don't exactly know what she's going there for, but she just goes in with this defiance of Toshido that, you know, yep, I'm here. I'm not staying, though. I'm taking some people with me and I'm leaving. And he's like, no. Well, everyone's free to go, you're not. And she just absolute defiance right in his face with the air and people all around. You know, she's just saying, no, I'm here. I'm here to take Kata and his new son and everything home to Ito. You know, we still have morning time. I'm just going to take them and I'm leaving. And Ishido didn't like that very much.
Yeah, that's one of the central themes around this episode is, like, you're not hostages, but you have to have a permit to leave, and we're not just giving away permits. And there's some of that, I don't want to say some, but a lot of that dynamic gets played out in this episode where she is under very strict orders to show up, get these two women and their son, and get out of there. You get this, you know, incredibly powerful scene where she's just completely defiant, and they're like, are you crazy? What's going on? She's like, I'm obeying the words of my lord. I'm obeying the wishes of my lord. Are you going to deny me that? Because a lot of the theme around this series has been honor and commitment and duty and service to your lord and to your country and to, you know, to your house. And there's a lot of that duty. And it's like, okay, are you really going to dishonor that tradition? Are you going to not allow me to do this? And you see a lot of that play out. And it gets to the scene where she, you know, gathers them up and she's getting ready to just walk right out the front door. Like, she's giving them all a big middle finger at this point, because she's like, you know what, I'm doing what I need to do. Stop me if you want. And it's very smart, and you kind of see it play out, like, why she's doing it.
Yeah, she's got, like, townsfolk, but also the regents, the council and stuff are watching from up above, and she's just marching them through the town. Like, yeah, I'm the general, I'm the leader, I'm marching this group out, and you're not going to stop me. And that was such a powerful scene of just, you got some action and violence, but you just got a breakdown of her as she's, you know, taking on the soldiers at the end, and she's doing her best, but they've been ordered, like, they can't stop them, but they can at least tell them that if you cannot harm her, you're not allowed to touch her. And you just get this breakdown of her fighting and trying to do her best, and then she has that big revelation at the end, a big reveal of, all right, you're not going to let me leave, then I'm taking my life at sunset. And yeah, it just explodes the rest of the episode from there.
What I really appreciate about it is the fact that, you know, you see so much in these, like, you could see, you could have written it to where she, like, for lack of a better term, hulks up and, like, takes out this entire crew and she leaves anyway. And then, like, it wouldn't have had the same impact that it, that I feel that it had when she knows that she can't take on this entire mm-hmm. army by herself. She's a skilled fighter. Like, she's got training and, you know, she's an incredibly well-trained fighter that can hold her, more than hold her own, but she's up against, you know, several men at this point. She's like, she makes a statement like, I'm a woman. Like, I, like, you know, like, how can I beat this many men kind of thing? And it was a very powerful scene, but you come to find out that this is all part of the plan too, because it kind of puts Ishido in a lose-lose situation here, because it's, well, do you keep her hostage and you're going to turn everybody against you, or are you going to let her go? And at which point, if you let her go, everyone else is going to want to leave too. Mm-hmm. And you're not letting them leave. So he's kind of backed into a corner, which is a brilliant power move, by the mm-hmm. way. And it's part of Torunaga's plan. But to your point, she sees the futility in it. She's like, well, I'm going to end my life here. Since I cannot fulfill the duties to my lord, I'm going to end my life. And she asks, I forget the lady's name to be her second, and they refuse.
Well, not the lady, the councilman.
Yeah, the councilman. That's who it was, to be her second in this, because part of the ritual of this that they do is, you know, your soul is, you know, condemned to hell if you just do this without having a second. So having that second is important in keeping the honor in your soul kind of thing. And you get this really incredible scene with her and John, to where John's like, got it. If you can't live for yourself, can you at least live for me? Like that kind of.
It was really touching moment between both of them.
Yeah, and at the end he agrees to be her second, which is heartbreaking because you know he has love for her, that he's trying to convince her that her life has meaning.
And he doesn't want her to die. He
doesn't want her to die. And you see the anguish on his face when he comes to the realization, like, okay, I still love her. I need to be there for her for this. And you get to the point where she's getting ready to commit the act, and she gets a little bit of a victory there when, you know, she's getting ready to do it, and Ishido walks in and just kind of throws the papers at her feet, like, here's your permits. You can leave in the morning.
And then you had exactly what you mentioned. Well, then everybody else in the room, I would like to leave as well. And like, you're not hostages here. Just apply and you'll get. But Ishido is Ishido. So we get this scene, which I'm going to go back just a little bit. That sure. We had some great dynamic between Yabu and John again. Sure. Because you get one scene where Mariko is there, but Yabu doesn't want translation. He wants, like, hey, Don't talk. We're going to talk right now. And they try to get to know each other with the very limited. Like, John's been learning Japanese and getting better with it, but he doesn't know a lot of stuff. And you got that kind of great dynamic back and forth. But we also got Yabu kind of end up getting not an ultimatum, but he offered his life and service and surrender to Ishido. And now it looks like Ishido wants him to come back to work for him. And because I got a little confused with this scene that we were up on the wall and Yabu's there and we're looking and we see someone come out and he ends up taking that person's life. But I couldn't remember, was that one of Torunaga's men or his men, or was it Ishido's men? And we get grappling hooks come off the wall. I'm like, all right, we're getting Crimson's. That doesn't look like Torunaga's men. What's going on here?
Yeah, you see these, I want to call them ninjas at this point, because
they call them shinobis.
Yeah, shinobi. So that's the proper word for it. Show up and there's this assault on the castle, but it's a coordinated attack on John Blackthorne and
Mariko.
And you get to the scene where Yabu himself is kind of caught between a rock and a hard place again, because he can't show all of his cards here, because he does agree to kind of turn and side with Ishido to, you know, put himself in the best position to stay alive. You know, he's always been out for his own interests, and he makes that call again. And we, you know, before we get to the very end, there's the, you know, the heartwarming scene where Mariko and John Blackthorne reconcile and they spend the night together. And, you know, as this attack happens, they're laying together, and it ends with just this incredible scene where they're trying to move away and get to safety and get into the safe room, and come to find out they have this dynamite and they're ready to, you know, blow the room open to get to them, and just this ultimate sacrifice that she gets to get everything, and she being Mariko braces herself against the door and you know, gets this honorable send off to where, okay, it doesn't directly imply that she's gone, but she takes the full brunt of this blast on this door, and she's, you know, the implied thought here is that she gives her life to save everybody that's in that room. And it's just this incredible culmination for this character that the words that I'm using don't do it justice, because she is so, like, she doesn't show a ton of emotion on her face, but you can feel the emotion in her voice and her eyes. She does so much amazing acting with just her eyes that you can just see, like, her processing and her, you know, come to this realization that, okay, I'm going to get this noble death that I would like, or, you know, get to make this ultimate sacrifice play to, you know, save everybody. And, you know, I'm not doing it justice with my words. You have to see it.
It's just gut-wrenching because, you know, you said you got the scene where she looked like she's going to kill herself. And, you know, we got in the last episode, Rintaro's father with Hiramatsu, we weren't sure if he was going to go through with it, and he did in a very brutal way. And we're like, all right, is she going to end up going with it? Because after that, I'm expecting her to do it, and it doesn't happen. And then we get that scene in the room. She goes in front of the door. I'm like, God, just we got her saved, but just enough for her to sacrifice to save the others. And we'll see how that affects Yabu going forward and how injured anybody else was in that room from her sacrifice to try to protect them. But you also got, you know, the gut-wrenching between John, like he was going to second her, and now she's good, and they got that reconcile, and, you know, he's protecting and shooting and protecting her, and they get in the room, and, like, he was prepared. I know he was prepared to be the one to do it, but she was just like, no, I've got it.
And him pleading with her to get away from the door, and she wouldn't, and it's just
gut-wrenching.
Incredible. And to back up a little bit, there was a little bit of another revelation that I didn't certainly see coming. She had a son.
Yeah.
And she meets with that son in that episode, and you're like, oh, I didn't know that she, you know.
Which I think we did touch on that she had a son at one point, I thought, but it's been a long while since there's been anything about him. Does it come back? And, yeah, what. Everything that he came to her about was just adding on. Yeah,
it's another pretty powerful scene with those two before you get to the end. And like I said, I can't give that woman flowers enough, man. She's been absolutely incredible in this show, and in a lot of ways she does make the show, and she keeps the show grounded. And just this incredible send off. If it is her send off, that it's a very, very heavy, man. And I'm expecting now, with moving ahead, looking forward a little bit to episode 10, the finale, I'm expecting at this point full rampage John Blackthorne. Like, I expect this man to go ballistic, because he's, you know, been in love with this woman for a minute now, and it's been the will they, won't they do, then they don't, and then they finally reconcile, and it feels like he's finally going to get out and hopefully potentially start this wonderful life with her, and it just gets ripped from him again. And I'm ready for that full primal, like, John Blackthorne, I'm gonna try to kill everyone I can on the way out of here kind of thing.
Yeah, episode 10, the series finale, is going to be just incredible. There's a lot to wrap up still. Like, we kind of felt, while this was an incredible episode Mariko, that we kind of felt like maybe some big action or something was going to happen here, other than kind of assassins and stuff going around. So there's a lot to still kind of happen with episode 10. And she was one of the highlights for me for the series.
Like,
she was an incredible actress that balanced this just strong woman that's also very weak but strong-willed. But, like, she had so many layers to this character that she performed incredibly well. And we can't say how good Anna did. Like, she was just unbelievable. Everybody was incredible, but she had some of the best performances of the series, and if this is her end, like, she went out with a bang. It was kind of what my mind was going
that was
to.
So terrible, but it
was very terrible. But she went out with such a deep, emotional, gripping, incredibly acted episode.
Unbelievable. And we've gone through this entire review, and we haven't even touched on the fact that there was no Torunaga in this episode.
Yeah, zero Torunaga. There
was none. Like, this has all been about his grand plan, but you're obviously going to see how that plays out in the last episode. But yeah, like, it was a Torunaga free episode. Mm-hmm. This is very much a Mariko and Osaka type, you know, in Osaka type story that played out almost to its completion. But yeah, this 10th episode, man. Ooh, I'm curious to see all that they pack into this thing, because we gotta get to some conclusion here. Like, is there going to be a winner or loser in this battle here?
Yep.
That's got to be coming.
Yeah, so all 9 episodes so far of Shogun are available on FX and Hulu.
So
you can watch it with the Disney Plus integration as well. It is incredible. 10 out of 10. If we were going to give a score to anything, the series is going to go down as one of my favorite of all time. Like, that, nothing about this show has been done wrong. Like, they've just done an incredible job from every aspect. And episode 10, the finale, drops on Tuesday. I'm ready for it, but I'm not prepared to see how this ends, because I know I'm going to probably watch this finale a few times. I've got to watch it when it comes out. We'll watch it again right before we review it, but we're at the end. We're there. The series finale, couple days away.
Yeah, can't recommend it enough.
So it's kind of weird to say something a little more lighthearted, because it's about World War II and Nazis and stuff, but our film review this week is about the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. So this is based on a true story. So there's a book written about it. The documents were declassified in 2016. It's based around the true story of the Special Operations Executive, which is kind of the first Black Ops mission that ever happened during World War II. So you have Henry Cavill's character, Gus March Phillips, is kind of a bad boy who doesn't play by the rules, and he's enlisted by Churchill to, you know, we need to get the Americans involved or we're going to lose this war. So we need to take out the U-boats that are preventing the Navy and the U.S. to be able to come in to the war. This is off the books. We can't have anything about it. You're going to a country that, you know, where the U-boats and stuff are is in a neutral territory, but the Nazis have taken over in that neutral territory. So it's off the books. You're on your own. You have to do it. And it is a wildly crazy, over-the-top, insane Guy Ritchie movie. Like, it screams Guy Ritchie through 100%. It out. But I had such a good time watching this movie. Like, Henry Cavill was over the top. He was looked like he was having the time of his life. Again, it's weird to talk that way about a World War II movie, because, you know, which we had with the Masters of the Air and even with Civil War being more, you know, our time period to talk about a war film being fun, but it was a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, at its surface, the subject matter is not great, right? It's war, it's death. A lot of horrible things happen in that, but this is told in such an entertaining way.
Over the top.
Yeah, it was, you know, very witty dialogue. It like you said, it sounded like they were having the time of their life as they filmed it. And that holds true if you go and watch the film, because you get to see Henry Cavill just going crazy. If he, you know, a lot of people asked him to be the new James Bond. I know that's been a lot of discourse about him potentially doing that. You get some kind of Bond-adjacent fun stuff in this film. So one of the tidbits of the film, to spoil it a little bit, is one of the people in the first meetings where they're putting this plan together is Ian Fleming, who worked in British Secret Intelligence and wrote the James Bond film. So Ian Fleming is actually in the room as this plan is being hatched, which, if you know anything about the history of James Bond, Bond was kind of based around this character that Henry Cavill played. So in some ways, Henry Cavill is the, you know, inspiration for James Bond.
This is kind of the second time he's played a Bond-like character, because he had the film, which I'm blanking now on the title of the film, but he played a James Bond-type character, and now he's playing the guy that inspired James Bond. Right. Just give him James Bond already.
Right, right.
We all want to see it.
He's done Argyle, and he's done, you know, some of the other films, and it's It's so well done. You get Alan Ritchson in the film as well, who we both love in Reacher, and the guy just is just a mountain scenery. Of a man. The guy is just a mountain of a man. He plays a Swedish character, and he's not Swedish at all. The accent is hilarious. It makes me laugh, but he's so funny in this movie mm-hmm. too, and he's just a straight killer.
And yeah, the guy is that you mentioned. It feels like every time I see him in something, he's doubled in size. Henry Cavill's not a small guy. He's right. A very tall, built guy. But in the movie, he has his penchant that if he sees a nice coat, he wants it. So through most of the movie, he's just putting on layers while Richen is taking off layers, and you just see the mountain of a guy he is. And like I say, he just chews every scene he is in. He is so fun to watch. He's basically a super ripped, I don't say, Robin Hood, because he uses a bow and arrow really well. But it does have a lot of violence to it. It is graphically at times just more of just the brutality of the violence more than the graphicness of it, but there is a little graphicness to it. But yeah, the Henry and Richen worked so well off of each other. They chewed scenery so well, and this is definitely a big there's a large cast to it, so they all have their roles. We split time between, you know, Henry Cavill's character, Gus, and the rest of the crew. And then you have two others who are kind of on the ground inside of this port that they're trying to get to, setting up more stuff. And they're fantastic as well. So this ensemble cast that they got together, it's well balanced. They all do their jobs really well. And there's quite a bit of fun to be had between these characters and what they do, even when there's one member of the team that has to be rescued, and you get a crazy over the top action sequence because you got Henry and the rest of the crew are laying down trying to figure out the right attack. All right, we're going to go at night. We're going to start with the towers. We're going to go here or there. And then two soldiers sneak up behind them, and you have Alan Ritchson's character takes them out, and then he just walks off and starts the battle on his own.
Yep, we're going to have to do this in the time. We're going down. Like it's so fun though. Like you said, it has brutality in the violence, but it's not graphic, like you said, over the top. It's not like gory or anything, mm-hmm. but the implied violence is there. And there's a really fun scene on a boat with Alan Ritchson at like towards the end of the film where he's just going nuts trying to take out as many Nazis as he can, and he stumbles upon an axe, and his main weapon of choice is like a bow and arrow in this, and he comes across this axe, and everybody in the theater when we saw it was like, oh my god, you're giving this giant man an axe. Like, what is he going to do with it? Use your imagination. But it's a ton of fun. It's an over-the-top telling of a very true story, and it's told in such an entertaining way. We were laughing during a lot of it. Laughing in the sense that it's the dialogue is, like you said, incredibly witty, incredibly smart. Mm-hmm. It's a ton of fun. It's silly. It's dramatic in some cases, but it was a lot of fun. We had a good time with it, and it told it in a way that was kind of believable in a lot mm-hmm. of senses of like how they would get to take this port that's just overrun with soldiers with a handful of guys to get past, you know, all of these boats that could detect them. They could be caught by either side, and they mm-hmm. have consequences for being caught by either side because it's complete off the books, you know, mission, and you know, just some of the absurdity that goes into it. Like, there's a point where it starts out, they have to get there in 15 days, but now due to circumstances, they have to get there 3 days sooner, which means not going the safe route that they wanted to go to get there completely. Now they have to add some, you know, tension there. And there's definitely a lot of tension, but it's so well made, so well written, so well acted. Mm-hmm. It wound up being even better than the expectations I had for the film going into it. Cause I was still anticipating enjoying the film and the story, but I wound up liking it a lot more than I thought I would. Mm-hmm. And it really speaks to how well everybody did in their roles, how well the film was made. It looks beautiful. It's funny. It really hits all the right notes, I think.
Yeah. Cause even with our main villain, this Nazi major who's at their general, I forget what his rank was within there. He was very Christoph Waltz, like
very, very much so,
from the Quentin Tarantino portrayal of his Nazi general, and he was very much like that. But you got more silly with him because you got the, you know, our female lead got him to dress up for a costume party, and he's like, he doesn't want to do it, but he's a very dark character, but we got a little light and levity to him, and there's some playfulness with that as well. But yeah, the ensemble cast, like, everyone did their job so well. It was taking serious subject matter, a true story, embellishing it, very making it over the top, and making it a very fun, entertaining film that I really recommend checking out.
Yeah, and it's doing really well review-wise, too, which is, like, you know, we talk about reviews and, you know, take them for what they will, but it seems like the discourse around the movie has been generally positive as well, too, so it's definitely one that we recommend you going to the theater and checking out. I don't know how long it's going to be in the theater, but it's definitely worth a watch.
It's worth seeing. Like, the big over-the-top action explosions just... Go check out this film. Absolutely. Get your own opinion on it. You may not like it as much as we did, but, you know, I think overall, even if you need to turn your brain off for it because maybe you just feel like there's too many historical inaccuracies with it, just turn your brain off and watch a funny action flick. Because, like I said, Henry Cavill, Alan Ritchson, they just chewed the scene that they were in. They were so funny, over the top. They, like I said, looked like they were having the time of their life making this film, and it brought me a lot of enjoyment watching it.
Absolutely.
So that's it for the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Again, it's in theaters now. Should be out there for at least a few more weeks because, you know, we're getting into the summer blockbuster series of films. May not be getting as long of a tenure in theaters just because of how many films are coming out. Coming up this week, we have the big Zendaya movie with Challengers. So that's looking like it's going to be making a lot of money. And then we have a smaller... action flick that, again, it kind of came out of nowhere. We just started seeing the trailers 3 or 4 weeks ago with Boy Kills World with Bill Skarsgård, and that looks like it's going to be a lot of fun and really over the top as well. So that looks like a good companion movie to the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare because it is a bloody, violent, over-the-top action flick.
Yeah, the trailer for that is absolutely insane. If you haven't seen the trailer for it, if you have kids around, don't watch the Red Band trailer. I don't know if there's a non-Red Band trailer for this film, though, because it is graphically violent. And it looks like a ton of fun. And spoiler alert, we're going to review that next week. So we're
you get H. John Benjamin doing a voiceover in that.
I want that man to narrate my life. Everybody wants Morgan Freeman to narrate their life. I want H. John Benjamin to narrate mine.
Yeah. And that's a guy I still can't get over. That voice does not match the body at all. There's some people where, that matches. Like, he's got this such incredible voice, and I'm glad he's got this where he's narrating this movie. Sure. He's doing the inner monologue, and I think the combination of him and Bill is just going to be really good, and so we can't wait to check that out. On sale digitally this week, we have Arthur the King and Monkey Man on April 23rd. We also have the Kristen Stewart Love Lies Bleeding on April 26th. So we have a pretty good mix. You got a family movie. You've got an Indian John Wick type film that we reviewed. You can check out in our previous episodes what we thought of that. And then you have Love Lies Bleeding, which is a little controversial when coming up, but it got great reviews. Like, I heard really good things about it, and I'm looking forward to checking that out.
Same.
Coming out on TV this week, we have the Dead Boy Detectives on Netflix. That's coming on April 25th. So this is a DC property, more kind of in the Sandman universe. We did get them showing up in Doom Patrol, but these are different actors, a different take on them. But we have seen them at least once now come into live action. So now they're getting their own series, so, you know, supernatural type of show. It's going to be really interesting to see how they've handled this and taken it on.
For sure. Definitely one worth checking out.
And then one that I know me and my kids are looking forward to, we have our first Sonic property of the year that's coming out in the Knuckles series on Paramount Plus. That's out on April 26th. I haven't seen yet if we're getting all episodes or if it's going to be a weekly release yet. But
I think from what I saw, it was going to be also... I'm completely speaking out of the side of my mouth when I say it, but I thought I read that all 6 episodes were going to drop at once. Which would be great because we can binge it and talk about it for sure.
I know I'll be binge-watching that with the kids.
Very exciting. Idris Elba, you know, coming back as Knuckles for the show. He's executive producing, so excited to check that one out. That one's been on our radar for a minute.
Yep.
But that'll do it for this week's episode of We'll Bring the Popcorn. We had a lot of fun talking about, you know, how much we're enjoying X-Men 97 and Shogun and Ministry of Gentlemanly Warfare, all good things, you know, to say about those properties. Coming up on our next episode, we will be reviewing episode 7 of X-Men 97. So we're a little past the halfway point in that show. Excited to see where that goes. We're also going to be talking about the series finale of Shogun. Very excited for the episode. Sad that it's ending because we're having so much fun watching it.
But yeah, I'm not ready for it to be over with yet, but I want to see what happens here. They've done such a great job.
Very excited about that. The season finale, the series finale, it's going to be big. We're going to talk about that as well. And we're also going to give our review of Boy Kills World, the new Bill Skarsgård film as well that we're very much looking forward to. That's going to be a fun watch. And I'm teetering on whether or not that's going to be a good review or bad review, because that looks like a film that could go really, really well or really, really bad. But I'm excited to see it and check it out because, you know, we love over the top films anyway. So that's definitely one that we're looking forward to watching. So we'll have all of that coming up next week. Tune in for that. Don't forget to check out all of our shows on YouTube as well as anywhere you find your audio podcasts. Check out our merch. Our merch is in the link in the videos as well. You can go to willbringthepopcorn.com to find out any other information you need from the show. And until next time, I'm Josh. This is Brad, and we'll see you next week.